This is Chris Comer, and I'm on the telephone with Bill Bruford, a drummer from England, and has been in many of your favorite progressive rock groups, including his current group, Earthworks, which is a jazz outfit. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Tell me a little bit about the current Earthworks tour. I know you're touring the USA to support your new record.
Yeah, certainly. Well, we just arrived here in Boston, actually. And, I've sort of been taking a long trip, a long path back to jazz, where I started out as a young guy. About a 32-year path, I think, probably, back to jazz. I'm a slow starter. And jazz is something very much after my own heart, and we have a cracking squad of young British players. And sadly not in Cincinnati, but we'll be touring coast to coast in the States in the upcoming weeks.
Tell me about the guys in Earthworks. I know it's a different lineup than when you first brought out Earthworks back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. We have a second edition, if you like. I like to use British guys for a number of reasons. Number one, it's a lot easier to rehearse if guys live around the corner and to work on music together. But secondly, I also want to preserve a Britishness about the band, because many of us international jazz players feel that jazz is now, you know, one of America's great gifts to the world, and is indeed an international sport now. And part of the purpose of it is to bring local color to the scene. So, you know, British guys like to have a British attitude to things. And, you know, Norwegians do, as do Russians. So that's the way we look at it. And I have an old British group, Patrick Klahar, we have on tenor saxophone. You may know him from Incognito, which was a good band that toured the world a lot. Mark Hodgson on bass, who you won't know, neither will you know Steve Hamilton, who spent 4 years at Berkeley here in Boston.
Hmm. It's impressive. And these guys are different than the guys you brought out in Earthworks
'80s. That's correct, but just a fresh draft of British young blood, yeah.
Well, I appreciate the nationalistic tendencies of your objectives here.
Well, you know, we don't want to just, we don't feel we need to or want to imitate Americans much, not much point in that. You guys do it extremely well already, so the issue becomes, what is it that anybody else can bring to the party?
Well, I know that there was a European movement in the 60s that goes on to this day, where avant-garde musicians took the jazz form, brought their own nationalistic tendencies to it. All of a sudden, you got guys like Derek Bailey and Peter Brotzman, and they took things into a far-out free jazz realm. What is your take on taking the American form of jazz and Britishizing it?
Well, it's hard to be that specific, but you know, clearly you're hearing, you know, my style is, I'm a British guy, I have a British background, British tendencies. If you look at the lyrics and titles to the music, it's British. It's partly the way I play, partly the choices I've made, partly my background in so-called art rock or progressive rock would definitely have something to bear on it. I'm English, and what's the point in having an Englishman play the drums if he's not elegant, economical, and understated?
Right. Well, when you were coming up as a young drummer, still learning your chops, playing with British progressive rock bands in the 60s, what sort of American jazz were you exposed to or had the ability to hear and to incorporate into your own style?
Because, strangely enough, the BBC in England filmed every Saturday night some of your great American jazz stars and broadcast them live to the nation at 6:30 every Saturday night on Jazz 625 at 6:25 on Saturday nights throughout the 60s. So I heard every great American jazz artist there was who was invited to London and filmed by the BBC. Art Blakey, Philly Joe Jones, Max Roach, all the great drummers, all, you know, Lee Morgan, Coltrane, all the great guys. And at age 13, I tell you, this was some heady stuff. And we liked, you know, later the Beatles came and the Rolling Stones came, and we quite liked that. But on the whole, we preferred jazz, which seemed to have more going for it.
And you incorporated some of those styles and some of those tendencies in your early progressive rock drumming.
Well, indeed so. You know, I kind of fell into what was a rock group, but in 1968... rock was a very generous and a very exciting place, almost more exciting than jazz, which had gone, as you said, very political, very atonal, very avant-garde. And all the London drummers, and by that I mean Peter Baker, who you know as Ginger Baker, he was had fallen into Cream, and he was a jazz player. And then Mitch Mitchell was playing a kind of Elvin Jones style behind Hendrix, and I just thought I would do a kind of Max Roach stroke Joe Morello, and I would do that in a group called Yes.
Right, and now you have the Earthworks, which over the last 20 or 30 years, how has that grown into what Earthworks is?
Well, Earthworks started as quite an extreme group, actually, in the sense that it was based around a very unusual instrument, which was the electronic drum set. In the mid-80s, that had got very exciting, and it was possible by that time to play chords and samples and pitches and melodies from the drums.
Yeah, it seems to me on that first Earthworks record, there's a lot of tuned percussion on it.
Indeed there is. Indeed there is. And the essential idea of the band was that the drummer would play these percussive and melodic backscapes to everything, and that sure as hell would make the front line sound different to the regular jazz group. And indeed, that was great. We ran that for four albums or so until A King Crimson revitalized itself in the mid-90s, and I put Earthworks in the garage, turned off the motor. By the time I came back out of King Crimson, I wanted to have the Earthworks that you're hearing today, which is purely acoustic.
Yeah, you have apparently shelved all the electronic drums and got out the old trap kit again.
That's right. Yeah, electronics hit a brick wall. Essentially what happened, like so many things, is it was a little too much for the drummers, who couldn't quite get into the complexity of it, and it was very complex. Now, of course, the mass market demands that something very simple is produced, and on the whole, that's what you get now, a kind of simple, can't-go-wrong kind of easier instrument to manipulate, but not nearly so creative as the old junk, old unreliable junk that I used to have to grapple with through King Crimson in the 80s and into the mid-90s.
I guess you don't always know if that particular electronic drum pad's going to work tonight or not.
There was a lot of that sort of problems, yeah. If you know, King Crimson particularly, which is one of the rocks, on the rock side, the bands I've been in, was known for using new technology, and that kind of came with the territory. And if you use new technology past its design limit, which all musicians are always going to want to do, then you're going to get some hums and cracks and burps and collapses and buzzes.
Let's take a listen to some music right now. Let's play a track from the first Earthworks record, and we'll follow it up with a track from the new one, and we'll be right back with Bill Bruford right after this. We'll be right back. We're back with Bill Bruford. I'm Chris Comer. And again, thanks for being available to take our call tonight.
My pleasure, Chris.
You're about to tour, about a dozen dates here in America, right?
Yeah, I think 16 dates, I think.
You like playing America?
Love playing America, and incredibly, and you can tell how dull my life has become, and I need to get out more. But I did figure out the other night that this is my 44th American tour.
Wow. So you've been over here quite a bit.
44 times to play. That doesn't include the visits to my sister and vacations and studio work and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you still play with the King Crimson guys much?
No, hardly at all. I took a vacation from that in 96, 97 maybe. I think we last played in Nashville in 97 probably. Basically, I think my time sort of expired there. I felt that I couldn't contribute very usefully. The door is still open. If there's anything I can think of that would add to the band, I'm sure I could walk right back in. But for now, jazz is very much occupying me.
Do you prefer playing in your Earthworks or your jazz situations over playing with Crimson or some of these other bands?
Well, it's not quite as simple black and white as that. I mean, King Crimson has for many years been my spiritual home. It's been the place where I felt that I could really contribute in terms of rock drumming, or broadly, you know, heaven knows King Crimson was a slightly cranky rock group. But hold on, I don't know what to do with this. You might have to edit this. I don't know what to do with it.
We'll be right back.
Back with Bill Bruford, I'm Chris Comer, and we were talking about King Crimson a moment ago, and I wanted to take a moment and play the double drum duet that you did with Pat Mastalotto. I know that right now Crimson is working as a quartet with Pat playing the drums. In the last incarnation, when you were in the group, Bill, you guys came out with this double drum duet, and it killed everybody, especially when you did it in concert. It was called Baboom. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, the title of the piece actually is a sideways smile at Max Roach, one of my early jazz mentors. He runs a percussion group called, in the African style, called Mboom, M apostrophe boom. So this is B-boom, ba-boom, sound of my bass drum, ba-boom, as opposed to Max Roach's M-boom. This was something that Pat and I worked on pretty hard. You know, he's a very good drummer, very steady guy. And one of the beauties of having two drummers is that you can move wheels within wheels, cogs within cogs. One guy can appear to be playing a related pulse to the other guy. So Pat is the steady clock ticking away, and I'm able to weave other meters in and around him and play tag with him, if you like. And we build a tension over that, and I think that's a lot of fun.
It is. It really is. So you're the one improvising or sort
absolutely.
Of...
Correct.
Playing
he's
the lead
steady guy, I'm the improviser.
He's playing rhythm drums, you're playing lead drums.
That sounds about right, yeah, if you like. He's the disciplined one, I'm the indisciplined one.
It's a fabulous drum solo or duet, however you look at it, in the middle of the Crimson concert. Let's play a version of that, and we'll be right back with Bill Bruford right after this. Baboom by King Crimson. Thank you. We're talking to Bill Bruford. I'm Chris Comer. And tell us a little bit about what's happening next after you're done with the U.S. tour. I take it you probably head back to the U.K. and put out some more jazz with Earthworks.
We do, Chris. Yeah, we're a full-time working band. Already this year we've been to Japan. We've been to South Africa. We've been kind of all over. After Earthworks, we go to Europe to do some European jazz festival dates. And in the fall, I have a long UK tour. I like to play my home country much more than King Crimson ever did. We hardly ever played in the United Kingdom, and it's nice for me to be able to get up and go 30 miles away from my house and play somewhere rather than 3,000 miles away.
A lot of press releases, critics, so forth, that I read in the papers have compared you to Art Blakey, saying that Bill Bruford is the Art Blakey of Great Britain. Do you care for that comparison or not?
Well, I think the comparison is more about the way I run my group than musical. I think what that's about is as it were, Blakey was famous for hiring young talent and giving people, unknown guys, very talented unknown guys, a shot in his band, because he was able to offer them an international platform on which they could develop their own particular voices. And I do the same thing with Earthworks. You know, I'm lucky enough to have an international audience, and in front of those people I can put some very talented young players who will be the leaders of tomorrow. So that's how that works, and that's the only relationship with the Blakey thing.
Well, that's really cool, and I hope some of the guys that have been in your group will emerge as artists themselves, bringing further young talent to the audiences
maybe.
Of the
you
world.
Ever heard of a guy called Alan Holdsworth?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's safe to say I gave him a platform to come to the States with.
That's right, and he plays a freaky-looking guitar most people can't even comprehend.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
I remember seeing videos of Alan Holdsworth from the 70s and 80s playing in some of your groups, and that guy was a little ahead of the times as far as technology goes.
A lot of talent out there.
Well, do you plan on getting back into the electronic drums and the drum pads, or are you sticking with the old traps?
No, I'm not touching that anymore. The sound of the acoustic quartet is a beautiful sound, one of the classic sounds of music, a little like a string quartet. You know its dimensions. You know roughly what a cello, bass, viola, and violin can do. You know roughly what's happening with a piano, bass, drums, and tenor saxophone. It's very hard to avoid the pleasure of that. And it's something that as I get older, I find more and more pleasure in, the delicacy of a fast-moving and interesting jazz quartet. You're going to have to hold now.
Okay. We'll be right back with Bill Bruford right after this. I'm Chris Comer, and rejoined here by Bill Bruford, and looking forward to his tour of the United States with Earthworks for the summer 2001 tour. I bet you're stoked about this one, aren't you?
I like playing the drums, if that's what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been playing the drums since the 60s, and the first band that you made a name with was Yes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about all those old records you made with that group?
Well, I don't think a whole lot about them. I mean, a lot of this stuff is a bit like old photographs in a scrapbook, you know? You kind of look at those weird pictures of how awkward you looked when you were 17 in those terrible trousers. Or pants, as you call them.
Well, you've got
and
a
you
reputation.
Well, I look really terrible. And then, you know, you look 30 years later and you think, oh, maybe I look a little better now, and that's about it.
Well, you should see those guys now. You have the reputation of being the first member of Yes who quit. Not kicked out because of the you know, you read the press and the Rolling Stone and all this about these guys having big egos or whatever, but you were the first one that quit. Why?
Well, I wanted to be a jazz drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Only I didn't know it at the time. There's lots of reasons, really. I mean, you know, a facile answer is I quit for the money. Namely, the problem with being successful is that too much money comes around the horizon. When that happens, the next thing that's going to happen, particularly in the United States, is repetition. What you get paid for is to repeat yourself ad nauseam, and then you turn into the Moody Blues.
Right.
So now you can take the money and die if you want, be my guest. But you are going to die. It's going to eventually kill you. You'll wind up bored out of your mind, probably drinking, probably overweight, probably bored, drunk, and overweight. Whichever way, it's going to hurt if you take the money and you stop playing any music. Ask Rick Wakeman,
mm-hmm.
who benefited from three heart attacks. So, you know, on the whole, thanks very much for you know, making it a success. Now let's all move on. You know, we don't have to stay there forever in the same place.
Right. And you didn't think the band was moving on enough for you?
I felt that there was no more that I could do for it.
Right.
And that I needed to move on. I'm sure the band was moving at the speed it moved at, but it was no longer something I felt I wanted to continue on doing.
But still, somewhere approximating about 10 years ago, you participated in the Union reunion tour, and I saw the video. It was a period of Yes I wasn't terribly interested in, but I saw a video in which you were comparing old Yes to Bonanza and TV theme songs, which was quite humorous.
Well, it was all true. I mean, John Anderson particularly was a very keen TV watcher, and I can see him now in the back of my mind with an acoustic guitar staring at the TV screen going bum-ba-dum-bum-bum-ba-bum-bum, which is a sort of cowboy theme from Bonanza or something. And we used that. Nothing wrong with that. You know, pop music comes from anywhere and everywhere, and that's fine, but it was time for me to move on.
So why did you participate in that Union tour, which... it seemed to be very grandiose, but not a whole lot of good new music came out of it.
There was not only not a whole lot, there was no music, good or indifferent or otherwise, fresh music that came out of it at all. I participated for a three-month summer vacation.
I see. But you still continued to work with King Crimson up through the days. What was the difference between the musical integrity of a group like King Crimson and Robert Fripp's groups and the Yes groups?
Well, how long have you got?
Another 5 minutes.
Completely different. I mean, of course, it's now come to pass that all these groups have to be lumped together into something called prog rock, and because they all came from a small island, we're all supposed to be the same.
But none of you guys are like the Moody Blues, and none of you guys are like Kraftwerk.
Well, that's all perfectly true, and Robert is a very idiosyncratic, a highly intelligent man, and his taste in music and his taste in art and how an artist should conduct himself were much more appealing to me than the Yes way of doing things. So, you know, it was natural for me to go and liaise with Robert and see what we could put together.
Talk to me a little bit about some of the current and contemporary jazz groups and drummers that keep you motivated.
Big subject, but on the whole, I'm a fan. I particularly like, you know, some great American players, of course, and I particularly like watching drummers as band leaders and composers too. You know, there's a terrific guy from New York, Bill Stewart, who I'm sure you know.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Stewart's recently done some stuff with Pat Metheny, but is a very talented young drummer, exquisite player, beautiful player, and a wonderful composer. I'm always interested in how other drummers do things. Joey Barron is a great drummer too, and an idiosyncratic, a colorful kind of guy. It's still true that in jazz, you see, all drummers don't have to sound alike. One of the great things about jazz is that authorship is still present. When somebody plays, he tends to sound different to the other guy, the previous guy you just heard, and he'll sound different to the guy who's coming up. And if you know a little bit about it, you can recognize his style. This is how it used to be, of course, in rock music until drummers were put aside and computers used.
Mm-hmm.
And drumming in pop music now is very, very ersatz. It's very polythene. It's indistinguishable one from another, basically.
Your style, from a listener's point of view, I can always pick yours out if I hear a record. I go, oh, that's Bill Bruford's record. And it's not always necessarily because of the way you tune your drums and all that hullabaloo, but I can hear a sort of a syncopated way that you structure the beat, the way that you put your hands on the drums.
Yeah, this is quite true, Chris. I think a little like a small... my drum line's a little small compositions.
Yeah.
I like to feel that the one I'm doing on this tune is going to be different to the one on that tune. I don't just take them down off the shelf. You know, this is a backbeat shuffle here. This is a New Orleans second line thing here. You know, now we do the twist over here. I don't take them down off the shelf. I try and custom make drum lines, little compositions for each tune, such as Baboom that I believe you just played, and the current Earthworks music.
Well, where does all the syncopation come from? Is it part of a Western art music minimalism style, or do you bring it from some of the old jazz drummers from days gone by?
Oh, from the old jazz drummers. You know, that's what the drummer does. You know, he cuts up time differently from the other guy. It's the way you cut up the time, the way you subdivide the beat. I spent my life subdividing the beat. It's what I do.
Well, whether you know it or not, and I'm sure that you do, a lot of it is reminiscent of minimalism, Steve Reich, music like that as well. And I hear the same kind of syncopation coming from these composers.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. You mentioned Joey Barron. Is he not one of the most fabulous drummers you've ever heard or not?
Yeah, Joey's terrific.
He's been a guest on our program as well. He's not only a real super down-to-earth guy, but he's probably one of the greatest drummers I've ever had the ability to go check out at a gig.
Yeah, he's great.
All right, well, thanks for taking the time with us tonight, and... we'll play a new cut, another cut here from the new Earthworks record. It's called The Sound of Surprise.
The Sound of Surprise.
And this is what surprise sounds like. Thanks a lot, Bill Bruford.
Okay, my pleasure, Chris. Bye now.